What up, fools? It's the Bitter End Podcast. You weren't expecting us, but we're back with a bonus episode.
Cha-ching!
It's a bonus! Blah, blah.
What a bonus it's going to be.
We are here to talk to an actor from Universal Soldier, Part 1. The Big Un itself.
Yep, the ball that started it all.
We are talking to the actor that played my favourite character from that first film, Mr. Tico Wells.
Yes, Tico Wells, who plays Garth. Now,
who's Garth, Tom?
We didn't really go into Garth's character massively on the first episode. We kind of picked up on him a little bit in story time in episode 2. But he was a character that both me and Todd really liked. He is one of the scientists that works for the Unisol program.
He's about half the age of all the others, and he's the guy who kind of questions everything they're doing and also gets completely bullied by all the other scientists.
He's like the young whipping boy. Like,
yeah, there's a really great scene early on where they're going down the dam, and like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren are like running along being there like they're zombies, and Dolph Lundgren like kills someone, and Garth is there and he says to himself, "Looks like homeboy's starting to enjoy this shit." And then all the other scientists go, "Shut up, Garth, that's ridiculous."
And that's
you shut your mouth.
That's basically Garth's character. But also, crucially, he gets killed by Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph, don't do it!
Where he gets the mind-erasing serum syringe shoved straight through his fucking head.
Boom! Oh, it's a good kill.
Yeah, it's a good kill, and it's our man Tico Wells doing that. So he's kind of I think he's maybe the audience surrogate, because he's the one who's always in there kind of questioning what's going on. He seems shocked by things. He's the more relatable person in a film full of cyborgy zombie soldiers.
Behemoths of men.
Yes.
I mean, even outside the confines of Universal Soldier, I could not possibly hope to relate to Dolph Lundgren all of his 9 foot tall majesty.
Absolutely not. But yeah, Tico took the time to sit down and have a chat with me and Todd.
Yeah, really kind of him. We spoke via Skype. He was situated in a secret bunker in California.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke to us here in Tom's home in tropical Brighton, UK. So without further ado, shall we hand over to Mr. Wells?
Let's do.
My name is Tico Wells. That's the name I go by. They tell me, you know, since I was a baby to use that name, so I've been using it. And you guys called me up about a movie I did back in 1991 called Universal Soldier.
Oh, what a movie it is.
Yeah, we've I had seen the movie when I was like 13. I remember like watching it on video. Todd had never seen it, and for the podcast, we're watching all of the Universal Soldier films.
Okay.
Because I didn't realize there were 6 of them.
I didn't realize there were 6 of them.
Yeah. Okay. How many did you know about?
I knew about 2.
Yeah. So like, which one was that? Is that the other one with Jean-Claude in? Like,
I don't remember. I just know Michael Jai White was in it.
Yeah, that is The Return. That's actually, weirdly, even though it's presented as the second one, is actually the 4th. There's 2
really?
Secret ones before that, yeah, that most people don't know about.
Yeah, they were made for TV, and one of them had Burt Reynolds in, and one of them had Gary Busey in it. So
what?
Yeah, that's what we thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Was Roland Emmerich involved?
No. Nobody was involved that was involved in the original thing, I think. So obviously you were in the first one, the one that everybody remember,
the big one.
How did you come about being in the movie? Did you audition for it, or how did it come about?
Did I audition? Wow, I don't remember if I auditioned or not. I had an agent at the time that represented the writer of the movie. What's Dean's last name? Dean, you guys got to help me out, man. You're talking about 1991.
Dean Devlin.
Dean Devlin, yes. And he represented both of us.
Okay.
And so it was sort of a nepotism thing, I think. I may have auditioned. I don't really remember. I probably did. But, you know, because I had some affiliation with Dean's agent and I just finished a movie called The Five Heartbeats with Robert Townsend, which has become sort of a cult classic over here.
Yeah.
I don't know about over there. Have you ever heard of that movie?
I've heard a lot about it. I've actually not seen it, but we've been looking up a fair bit about it in advance of talking to you today.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like the black people's, one of the black people's favorite movie. It's our 25th anniversary and people still watch it. Universal Soldier was exciting. It was a very exciting thing. I hadn't done many features at that time. Just remember, I knew of Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I knew of Dolph Lundgren and these folks. And then most of us, you know, most people didn't know anything about us. I remember going to rehearsal at Roland Emmerich's house. And, you know, it was a sort of very, very effeminate guy talking about blowing up stuff and everything. It was really this kind of odd configuration of a situation there, because I had my stereotypes of what
an action director was going to be like.
Yeah.
It seemed like Roland Emmerich hadn't really made that many features before this one. Universal Soldier was kind of his first real big budget. Is that right?
Yeah, he had done something in college in Germany or something, and it was a real big smash or something. He won some awards over there because they fund their filmmakers over there. And so I don't know how it evolved that he got to do this one. But I just remember him like kind of like, yes, we're going to like blow this thing up and it's going to be great. Everything will be, and then soldiers sort of come out of this big tank like thing, and then they just kill some people, and then we just blow this thing up, and you know.
That's crazy. Did you have any idea that you know that he would go on to make anything as big as Independence Day?
No, he did. He and Dean just kind of got on a rocket ship after that and just took off. They didn't take me with them, but, you know, hey, you know, as the cookie crumbles.
You just saying that, like, it was like Roland Emmerich coming from Germany. I mean, that must have been a set with a lot of thick European accents flying around the place, because you had like Jean-Claude and Dolph, like you got German, Swedish and Belgian.
You know, Dolph and Jean-Claude didn't socialize with us very much.
Oh no.
No, they were pretty much to themselves. There was a little gym that they provided for us, and we'd all sort of see different people at the gym, but Dolph was very much into his weightlifting and his martial arts training, and we were all staying in this place called Laughlin, Nevada, which is kind of like a casino town. And we were in this hotel resort. And so some of us were just enjoying the resort life. And, you know, I would see Van Damme, you know, in the cafeteria, in the dining area sometimes. But he was really shy. He had some problems on the Cyborg movie. And I think it kind of humbled him. You know, there were some people that got hurt on that movie. So I think he was very humble at that point in his life, Jean-Claude.
Do you mean physically hurt?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. Do some research on that one. That there's some tragic stuff happened.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, I remember one of the things that I was most concerned with is safety.
Hmm.
I was taught in drama school, you know, when we're doing combat, that no one is to get hurt and no one's to hurt anybody. This is art. And sometimes people don't have that type of training or don't have that motto in their head. And, you know, they were playing really rough. You know, some people got hurt a little bit on the set. Dolph is a big dude.
He looks it.
You know, and it was just about, you know, I remember him smashing one guy through the helmet, you know, and giving him a bloody nose. And there was one scene where he was getting ready to kill me. And he was actually physically choking me.
Oh my God.
Oh God. Yeah.
And I had to like, you know, say, dude, this is a movie. I want to be able to talk after this, you know? So I sort of coached him in where to grab on my suit and make it look real. But the object is for no one to get hurt.
Yeah, I hope so, and I'm glad that you didn't get choked for real.
I had done another movie before, which I got cut out of, called Sea of Love with Al Pacino, and they were roughing me up in the hallway, and it was one of my first movies ever, and I was just young and dumb and excited. Yeah, just rough me up, man, throw me around. They ripped my jacket and they were grabbing my skin and stuff. But as you get a little more experience, you go, wait a minute, this can get real crazy here. So by the time I got to Universal Soldier, I was able to exert that kind of safety into my scene, because I don't know if Dolph had ever learned that, or if anybody had ever, you know, coached him, but he was willing. He was willing to take the coaching, so I'm glad about that.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I would not want to be at the wrong end of Dolph Lundgren's chokehold.
No way.
Yeah, no.
Like, I mean,
he came from he's a martial artist as well, and you know, he was showing me all his scars and this and that, and I'm like, wait a minute, dude, that's cool, that's cool. I appreciate the battles you've been through, but. Not here.
not for me, thank you. Yeah.
No.
Did you know who Dolph was before filming? Was he
just from Rocky? Just from Rocky. That was his kind of big splash in America.
Yeah. Were you much of a fan of like the action genre? Like before doing this film, were you kind of like excited to be in a big guns blazing exploding film?
As a kid, I had a lot of guns and toys and, you know, different laser. I had a lot of toys. My stepdad was in the military, so he loved, you know, kind of like guns and army movies. My mother loved army movies and stuff like that. So I grew up with a sort of affection for war movies and violence and cops and robbers. And it wasn't until I became an adult that I really realized, wait a minute, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
We're actually training our society that this level of violence is acceptable. We through films can teach, and they do teach, and they condition us because we love them so much. And particularly in America, we've conditioned our population that killing is cool, violence is cool, sexism is cool, racism is cool.
One of the reasons that I really gravitated towards your character as Garth in the movie is your character seems so different from all of these big macho guys. I don't know, you seem more like a surrogate for me as the audience member watching it. You're kind of constantly looking around going, this is a crazy situation, what's going on? Was that a conscious decision on your part to kind of tone down that macho?
I mean, I'm a small guy anyway. I'm like 5'9", maybe 150 pounds, 155 at the most. And I like martial arts. I like boxing and everything. But there's a very gentle part of me that never really liked fighting. I think it makes sense. But who am I? Who am I to judge?
From what you're saying about, obviously, the depiction of like violence and things like war in film and the media, like, do you sort of have any regret about being in a big budget action kind of war sort of film? Like, if you got offered something like that today, would you be like, okay, that's cool? Or,
well, I had fun, and as a young actor, I think you want to do, the sky's the limit. You want to be able, mm-hmm, to play a rock, a soldier, a homeless person, a politician. You want to be able just to have a wide range of experiences. But as a human being, as you progress, things change in your world, and you look at the world differently. Like, I'm looking at our world and going, we're crazy as hell. So wait, hold on. I don't know if I answered your question. Would I do it again? It depends on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, sometimes the money is good.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, despite all this, and I sympathize with your reservations and about the violence in the film. However, it really comes across as a very entertaining ride, start to finish. I'm in my 30s now. I somehow made it through all these decades without having seen it before. And then my good buddy here, Tom, finally showed it to me. I thought it was a great time. And I had a lot of fun, especially, I've got to say, before we even knew we would be talking to you, your death scene with Dolph Lundgren in the lab, highlight of the movie for me. Maybe it's just the horror fan in me coming out. So just for the listeners, to recap, this is the scene where your character, Garth, kind of offers to sacrifice himself to go in and attempt to overpower Dolph Lundgren. Doesn't work, unfortunately. And Dolph punches a syringe through your face, I believe. Is that?
Yeah, through my neck, my head, my skull.
Oh, what was it like? What was that like to film?
It was great because I've been acting ever since I was old enough to walk and watching television and pretending, and I used to love playing hide and go seek. So I have this imagination and I like acting. I like it. It's something weird about it. When you get on a set, are you guys actors too?
No, not at all. Just appreciators.
Okay. Well, there's always a sort of hierarchy on set. So if you're a background actor or extra, you're like sort of on the low end of the food chain. You're like one of the field peasants or whatever. If you're the director or the producer, the financier, you're in the ownership booth. If you're one of the stars, you're treated as royalty. You know, you're the top gladiator or whatever. And if you're a person who has a supporting role, you're in between. You have way more clout than the extras or somebody who just has a bit role, but you're not quite up there with the main stars.
Mm.
And everybody kind of knows this, and you see how people get treated differently. It's a fascinating world, even as far as going to lunch. When it's lunchtime, move out the way. The stars are coming through. Let them get in line first, before the crew, before the extras, you know. The main actors, we get to eat first, you know, and stuff like that. It's a very caste system.
Mm.
And at that point, I hadn't done a lot of movies, but I had been working with some big people. I'd worked with Al Pacino, and,
yeah,
you know, Spike Lee, and a lot of other people. And Dolph and Jean-Claude were the stars, so to speak. And just learning how to interact with the different egos, the different, it's an education.
I mean, it must be very different. Every film set is going to be different depending on who the director is and the producer and how they're running it and what the stars are like. I can imagine with Universal Soldier, with Van Damme and Dolph and all the other guys playing the other kind of background Universal Soldiers, there must have been a lot of testosterone on that set. There's a lot of big dudes.
Yeah, a lot of big dudes, a lot of big dudes. And do you know who Tiny is? Tiny Lister, Zeus? He was the big black Universal Soldier, bald head.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Yeah. When I got to the set, they had had me in some little small little motel on the outskirts of town, and all the main people were up at this big, beautiful resort hotel, and he came and picked me up and made sure I had a room, and I always remember him and thank him for that, because you find some amazing people sometimes on sets, people who take you under their wing and look out for you and just make sure you're all right. And he and I actually did another movie called Trespass after that with Ice Cube and Ice-T.
What a cast.
Yeah.
Wait, did you say Zeus? Was he a wrestler?
Yeah, he was for a while.
Oh, uh-huh. He was in No Holds Barred with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
exactly. Now I know exactly who you mean.
He played Debo. Some people know him as Debo in the Friday movies.
Ah, right, that's okay. Also Ice Cube, right?
Yeah, also Ice Cube. Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you guys were on this resort town, you said, in Nevada, was it?
Yeah, it's a place called Laughlin. But we filmed in the state of Arizona.
Okay.
A little town called Kingman, Arizona. Just desert, just dry, hot desert.
Was that quite a difficult environment to film in?
It was just hot. And I remember one scene where this gas station gets blown up. And I remember thinking, wow, this is great. I'm on this Hollywood set. And then I look up in the sky and it's all black. I'm like, wow. We're polluting the air.
Oh no.
Oh god.
Yeah, you know, so I'm a Pisces too, so I see both sides of things. You know, I see the art, and then I see, oh my god, the environment. We're screwing up the environment. But anyway, it's amazing. You put a group of people together and they work like clockwork. The crew, you know, the fire department had to be there, we had this big tank that we were riding around in. Part of it we filmed in Arizona. Part of it we filmed the interior in L.A.
Oh, right.
After we came back. Yeah, because there were scenes where we were just inside the big tank. And so that was shot in L.A.
Oh, cool. And,
yeah.
Was there kind of something of a party environment at all, or in the evenings when you're off set? Or were people very sort of studious?
Yeah, I mean... God, I remember going to see the Temptations because it was, like I said, it was a resort and the Temptations were there.
Awesome.
They knew me from The Five Heartbeats, which is a movie about a group similar to the Temptations. And I got to see them perform live, and that was amazing. When you come on a set, you're strangers. But after, you know, so many 10-hour days together, you become this organism. This sort of family unit, and you need each other. You know, I think somebody like Dolph, who, you know, English is not his first language, this is not his native country, probably, you know, felt a lot isolated, you know, and I would go up and talk to him, you know, and we became sort of, you know, friendly, not friends necessarily, but friendly, and he would open up, and I think that's why he was, you know, receptive to when I brought up some safety issues, like, look, man, we got to be able to do this take after take after take, and I want to be able to talk afterwards, you know. So one of the things I've learned, and I'm still learning, is, you know, is that these are not just stars, quote to speak. There's no such thing as a star. These are human beings. And even though I'm an actor and sometimes people look at me that way, when you're not the top man on the totem pole, you're looking at these people that way. You know, when I've worked with Denzel Washington, you know, it's like he was, you know, famous star, you know, and he wasn't as big as he is now, but he was already on his way. And you're a little nervous. You're a little tentative about how is this person going to react to me, you know, and a lot of times they want to engage. They want to be let their hair down. They don't want to have to play this role everywhere of being a celebrity or being a star. And like I said, I worked with Al Pacino one time, and he would always go back to his dressing room after every take, you know, after every scene. And a lot of us would hang out on the set and just talk and get to know each other. And then I remember one time he was walking back and he kind of looked over at us. We were having so much fun. He started gradually coming over and hanging out with us and developing that camaraderie. And it felt, I think it felt good to him, you know.
Mm.
Because he didn't, you know, he didn't need to talk to us ever. He was Al Pacino.
And he always will be.
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing, and I'll tell you how long ago that was, Mike Tyson was going to fight this guy named Michael Spinks. And it was a 90-second fight. And I was sitting next to Al Pacino during the fight. They brought all his food in. We had a big old suite. You know, after work that day, we all came together and we were just so excited to see this Mike Tyson fight. And that fight was over so fast.
Oh, no.
Like 90 seconds, the fight was over. And by that point, he was a friend. He was a colleague. He was a human being. He wasn't Al Pacino. You know, he and Diane Keaton were there, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And that was a great experience to say. I sat next to Al Pacino, you know, watching a Mike Tyson fight for 90 seconds. Yeah.
What a sweet 90 seconds that must have been.
Yeah. Same thing happened with like Van Damme. You know, sometimes we're sitting around eating or whatever, and you get to talk to people and get to talk to them and find out, you know, a little bit about his journey and you know, what it took for him to get from being this martial arts phenom to being a movie star, you know.
It's quite a crazy journey for a guy with, you know, his thick accent and...
Yeah. And you got to really take your hat off to what Van Damme accomplished in film industry. And there's a movie he made, too, called J.C.V.D.
Yeah.
Did you see that movie?
I didn't, but I've heard a lot about it.
I've heard it's got some there's like one scene in it, which is like some monologue that he does all towards camera in one take, which is meant to be insane.
It's beautiful. It's all about this fallen action star who gets accused of robbing a bank. He's this over-the-hill action dude, and it was really touching because we all get older. Like I say, it's 2016. You guys are calling me 2016. I did Universal Soldier in 1991, you know?
Yeah.
I'm in my 50s now, so the time has passed.
I know it was a long time ago, actually, but I was just wondering, did you get to attend the premiere for Universal Soldier? Do you remember anything about like what it was like to see the finished film for the first time?
Wow, man. I can't remember it, man. Aww. Really, tell you the truth. I can't remember the premiere. I just remember that I liked what I saw. I thought it was good work. I thought Van Damme's character was very sympathetic. You know, you really feel for him.
I love that scene where he has to learn how to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and watch it, matter of fact. I'm going to go back and watch the movie.
It's some good fun. You can have what is it now, like 25 years? Like a 25th anniversary screening. Why not?
You know what I do remember? One of my best friends, matter of fact, I'm at his house right now. I remember him coming and knocking on my door. Because he was going to see the movie that night, and he was excited, and I was like, wow, the movie's coming out tonight. And, you know, he was like, yeah, man, I'm on my way. Me and my lady are going to see the film. And it was just a lot of excitement, and the technology has just from then to now is crazy. I mean, just what you can do and how fast you can edit and the special effects that can be done. Sometimes it overshadows the storytelling.
I think it's nice if you go back and like watch Universal Soldier, that obviously because it was made in 1991, there's not a lot of, or maybe any kind of really in the way of CGI effects. It obviously seems like, you know, you guys are out there in the desert blowing stuff up, and I don't know, I find that I think that people connect more, even though it's like, you know, cars flipping in the air and fire shooting out of things and all that kind of stuff. You can tell when something is real on a film rather than CGI. So, I think it does give people a... Is it possible to have more of a connection to an explosion? I don't know, but I think I think that maybe you can. So I think that's a nice thing if you go and watch that movie.
I think if you believe in the characters, then what's happening to them becomes real. So like Roland and Dean went on to do a movie about Godzilla.
I love that movie.
Okay. Well, in that movie, the special effects are the star.
Yeah.
More so than the people.
Yeah.
That's how I experienced it.
Yeah. One of the stars was, I think...
Matthew Broderick.
I don't really like Matthew Broderick starring in my films anyway.
Oh, man, Ferris Bueller, I love it. He took a day off.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's coming to the movies for something different. You know, say if a military guy comes to see Universal Soldier, this may be his fantasy. Someone else coming to it, maybe a female, she may relate to the female part, or she may relate to something else in the movie. You know what I mean? Everybody's bringing their own baggage to the movie. It's subjective.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the baggage I brought to the movie, I enjoyed it. It was a good time. It was like, it was a romp. It was an action romp. And thanks for being in it. Thanks for making Garth.
Thank you
for making Garth. I was sad when Garth died.
Oh man.
Because I think it's in a film where a lot of the people that are getting killed are kind of these zombie-esque soldiers. So when Garth suddenly goes like, no, I'll go in there. It's like, don't go in there, Garth. Don't do that.
You don't stand a chance against Dolph Lundgren,
he's
Garth.
He's twice as big as you.
I know. Well, I appreciate you guys thinking about me. It's an honor. And I hope I've had something interesting to say.
Is there a problem, medic?
No, I'm just... checking the injection device.
Was it broken?
It's making some strange noises. I just wanted to make an adjustment.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Let's see if it still works.
Dr. Hayes!
Stop it! Stop it!
Are you ready? It's memory clearance time.
No! Stop it! You're gonna kill him!
Dr. Hayes! Let him go!
And that's it. That's the end of our chat with Tico Wells. Wasn't he great?
He was a great guy. What a gent.
We would like to thank Tico Wells so much for taking the time to talk to us. And thanks to you guys for listening. We are going to continue to be on our between season break. And then very shortly, we will be back with season 5.
It's going to be great, guys.
Mm. Until then, have yourselves a happy time and stay safe. We'll see you soon.